You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news in technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey folks, Ben Mathis here with a couple important announcements. You know that we have great advertisers that support the show and keep it free for you to listen. And one of the reasons why advertisers love Kick-Ass News is that they know the show has amazing listeners. Right now, we have a survey that I'd like you to take to help us learn more about our audience. Just go to podsurvey.com/kick. The survey will only take 5 minutes. We're going to ask you some questions about yourself and what you like to buy, but it's completely anonymous, and your answers will help us find advertisers that are well matched to you, your interests, and the show. And as a way of saying thank you, when you're finished, you can enter a monthly drawing to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Even if you've taken our podcast listener survey before, I'd like to ask you to take this one and help support the show. It'll be a big help to me, and don't forget that you have a chance to win that $100 Amazon gift card. Once again, that's podsurvey.com/kick. That's K-I-C-K. Thanks for helping us find the best advertisers so that we can keep the show free. Also, the holidays are upon us, and if you're like me, you'll skip the madness of the stores and do most of your shopping on Amazon this year. And if you're going to be doing that anyway, then help support the show by going to the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copying and pasting the Amazon link there into your web browser before you start ordering. Then Amazon will toss us a little something for every purchase you make this holiday season. You have to shop for gifts anyways. They've got just about everything you can imagine on Amazon delivered right to your door. It won't cost you anything extra, and you can help support the show. So it's kind of like giving two gifts for the price of one this year. And that, my friends, is what you call a Christmas miracle. So again, go to the sponsor page at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser before you start shopping. And if you feel extra generous this Christmas, then make a donation to keep us going over here at GoFundMe.com/kickassnews. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis and welcome to Kick-Ass News. It's the holiday season, a time of year for giving presents, counting your blessings, and spending time with loved ones. But for some, it means getting snockered on eggnog at the office holiday party and telling your boss what you really think of him. Or having one too many glasses of wine and deciding that Christmas dinner is the perfect time to bring up some long-forgotten grudge with your uncle. Or worse, spending it with a bottle for company to take away the sting of being alone at a time of year meant to be shared with family and friends. According to one study, Americans' average blood alcohol levels are highest in the month of December, and all that drinking can lead to some very, very bad decisions. On today's episode, I'll talk with journalist and filmmaker Perry Peltz, who's behind a new film that examines the subject called Risky Drinking, and I encourage you to take honest stock of your own alcohol consumption and ask yourself, are you a risky drinker? From Perry Peltz and Oscar and Emmy winner Ellen Gusenberg Kent, Risky Drinking is a co-production between HBO and the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. With nearly one-third of adults in the U.S. engaging in problem drinking at some point in their lives, this film challenges viewers to recognize when their drinking may be putting them at risk and offers information that could help millions of Americans lead healthier lives. Through case studies and expert analysis, the film investigates the broad spectrum of risky drinking at different ages and stages in people's lives. It explains the science behind alcohol use disorders and provides stunning statistics about its prevalence and hazards. Today, Perry Peltz will talk about some of the people she followed in her film who are struggling with various degrees of alcohol addiction. She'll discuss how the new thinking is that drinkers fall on a spectrum of risk rather than simply having a drinking problem or not having one. And she'll discuss the broad array of treatments being offered today that go well beyond the old 12-step program to include medications and somewhat controversial solutions like moderation. Then I'll talk with Dr. George Koob, the director of the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, which co-produced Risky Drinking. Dr. Koob will share what signs to look for if you want to know if you might be a risky drinker. He'll discuss how moderate alcohol consumption may actually have some health benefits. He'll discuss the long-term toll alcohol addiction can take on your physical and mental health, and how drinking gradually alters your brain's pathways to make it harder and harder to quit. Coming up with Perry Peltz and Dr. George Koob in just a moment. Perry Peltz is a journalist who has worked with Dateline, 2020, CNN, and NBC. She's also a filmmaker behind a new HBO documentary called Risky Drinking, which she produced and segment directed with Oscar-winning filmmaker Ellen Gooseberry Kent. The film airs Monday, December 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern on HBO. Perry, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be a part of this.
Well, you know, I'm going to start with, I guess, an obvious question. Do you drink?
You know, it's a good question. In fact, I don't drink.
Okay.
I stopped drinking more than 10 years ago. It wasn't any cataclysmic moment for me, but it just wasn't kind of working as well as it had been. And I decided to try and stop drinking for about a month and see what that felt like, and I liked it, so I never started
again. Okay. And this film explores different approaches to alcohol disorders and how to treat them. Mm-hmm. If I may make this personal, what worked for you? Was it just quitting cold turkey, or?
I did. I just stopped drinking.
Okay. Okay.
So for me, it wasn't. You know, I didn't have to kind of go through any of the methods that we talk about in the film. I just stopped drinking. You know, I think that for everybody, it's a personal decision. It's where their drinking is. It's the consequences that they are experiencing. It really is an individual process and decision.
I also noticed on your Wikipedia that you have a master's degree from Columbia in public health, and it says in 2008 you took a break from journalism to attend medical school. Did that play into your interest in this subject?
You know, I love medicine, and I have a master's in public health, as you say. So I've always been interested in public health issues, and as a journalist, have tried as much as I can to focus on issues related to public health. I had the privilege of directing a documentary for HBO about the disparities in healthcare for women with breast cancer. So I like to focus on public health issues. So yes, alcohol abuse disorder is a public health issue. It's something that a lot of people drink, and the vast majority drink responsibly without problem. But for those who struggle, it is clearly, it's a real public health matter. So it was really a privilege for me to be able to work on this film.
And in the description of the film, it says that you will highlight the paradigm shift away from the old disease and addiction model that sends too many people into hiding rather than encouraging them to open up about their drinking and seek alternative options for realistic change. Why is the traditional wisdom about addiction and treating alcoholism as a disease problematic?
I think that when we label it as a disease, there is an important part of it, which is it's not a moral failing. It is a disease. But typically, I think that's more in the middle of the spectrum towards the end of the spectrum. I think if you look at somebody who may be a binge drinker or who may be in the early stages of a drinking disorder and say, you know, you have a disease, I think that can be a turnoff. And I think that can be problematic. What I think that Ellen and I set out to do is to put faces to the concept that drinking is not a binary. It's not a yes or no. It's not black or white. You're not fine or an alcoholic. Most people who struggle with a drinking issue are somewhere in the middle of what is a spectrum. It's just not a binary. And that is something that the president of HBO documentary film, Sheila Nevins, was really intent on our looking at, trying to people to be able to see themselves possibly in some of these, the people that we profiled in this documentary. Not having you say, well, I must be fine because I haven't lost my job, I haven't lost my spouse, I haven't had that many consequences. You can have a problem well before you get to that point. And it doesn't mean you're an alcoholic. It doesn't mean you have a disease. It means that you're struggling in some way with the meaning for you and how it impacts your life and how you want to live your life.
And one thing that I found interesting in the documentary is that we're getting away from this idea of someone either has a drinking problem or they don't. And now we're moving toward more of a spectrum of risk. Walk us through the spectrum.
Right. Okay. So the spectrum basically starts at the very early stages where you may be showing some signs of a problem. And what are those signs? It varies, and an expert could really lay those out for you. But maybe you're drinking more than you want to. Maybe you're not feeling well in the morning. Maybe you're forgetting some of the things that you're supposed to do. And then it progresses to the more moderate stage in the middle where you're consistently drinking more than you want to drink. And then it goes to the severe end of the spectrum, which is typically what you think of when you think of an alcohol use disorder or you think of an alcoholic, somebody who is consistently drinking more, somebody who is being forgetful, somebody who consistently doesn't feel well, somebody who's having health consequences, somebody whose relationships have been impacted. Those are all the kinds of signs that you start to see much more consistently towards that right side or more extreme side of the spectrum.
And in the film, you talk about wanting to encourage realistic change. What do you consider realistic change?
Well, I think the realistic change really is a very individual question. I think realistic change for somebody at the beginning part of the spectrum may mean a more moderate approach to alcohol, may mean a more harm reduction look at how they're drinking. Maybe instead of drinking 5 nights a week, they cut down to 3 nights a week. Maybe instead of drinking 4 drinks a night, they go to 2 drinks a night. So I think that the question of what is realistic is really up to the individual. Somebody who is in the more severe side of the spectrum, you look at somebody like Neil, who we portray in the film. For Neil, there is no room for moderation. He needs abstinence, and there's little room for what is a definition of what's realistic for him. So I think it's really up to the individual. We just wanted to be able to lend a voice to this concept that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach anymore. It used to be that it was 12-step or bust, that was really the prevailing treatment model. And 12-step, first of all, isn't a treatment. It's a much more of a community kind of support group.
And that, but is 12-step the same as AA, right?
Well, AA
are they one in the same
12-step program?
Okay.
There are many 12-step programs. AA is probably the most popular one, the one that people have heard of the most, but it is a 12-step program. That's correct. And it's a wonderful program and it helps a lot of people. So again, the idea is that there's a lot out there. The term has been thrown around a lot and it's become a little bit of a cliche, the old toolkit. But the truth is that there are a lot of tools in that toolkit to help people who are struggling. There is analysis, there's, you know, therapy, there is 12-step, there are medicines. There are many things that you can do to help individualize your own response to your own drinking issues or your own drinking problems or your alcohol use disorder, whatever it is. And I think that for people to think that they're going to go and they're going to talk to somebody and that somebody's going to say to them, well, you should go to a 12-step program, that's not the only answer that you're going to get. The likelihood is you're going to hear about a lot of options. And we want to encourage people who are in some way dealing with this, either themselves or for a loved one, that they understand that there are lots of things out there and it doesn't look the way it did even 10 years ago.
Yeah, and 12-step programs like AA have been guilty of propagating this idea that they are the only solution. It's problematic because another critique of 12-step programs is that they push the idea that you have to believe in God or some higher power in order to complete the 12 steps, and that might push a lot of people away, perhaps.
Well, you know, you're right. I think that is the thinking, that you have to believe in God, but you know, what we learned is you don't. Higher power can be anything. Higher power could be your friend. A higher power could be your work. A higher power could be anything. But yes, you're absolutely right. It has certainly suffered from people thinking that it is related to religion in some way. And I am not by any means an expert in 12-step recovery. But I know this, that we have done a lot of research on it, and it helps an awful lot of people. So I think it's an important part of the treatment arsenal that people, you know, can use it. They don't have to use it. It's readily available. It is really inexpensive. And so access to it is quite easy. It's not always so easy for people to get help.
Tell us about the four subjects you followed.
We followed, as you say, Ben, we followed four people. The first story we followed was a young woman named Kenzie. Kenzie is in her late 20s, and she is somebody who says that she likes to drink Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. She doesn't drink the rest of the week. She would probably be classified as when she does that, as a binge drinker. She lives in Denver, and we spend Halloween weekend with her, which is a weekend that there's a lot of partying that goes on.
Yeah, big drinking so, holiday.
Yes, exactly. As it's been called, Halloween. So that's Kenzie. And then the next story is a man named Mike. And Mike moves to St. Thomas because he's created quite a mess in his hometown from his drinking. And you meet Mike in St. Thomas with his son, and you learn about his drinking and that he wants to try to moderate. And that's the introduction to this concept of moderation being introduced. Do you really have to give up alcohol to deal with an alcohol problem? So that's the Mike story. And then there is Noelle. Noelle is a young mom in her early 40s, and she is part of a group of women who like to have mom's night out, as many women across this country like to. But unfortunately for Noelle, she runs into her own drinking problem. And it's the story of how her friends tried to help her deal with her drinking. And then the last story is the story that people are more familiar with. It's the guy who is at the end of the spectrum. He has cycled in and out of rehab more times now than he can probably count. While we were with him, I think the number was 12 or 13 times through rehab and detox. So he gets to a point where he is so uncomfortable physically that he has to go detox. And then he comes out and he doesn't drink for about a month. And he's able to maintain sobriety for that period of time. But then he goes back to drinking. And what we learned from the experts is somebody like Neil has had real brain changes that have taken place. And so this need to drink is not just because he can't stay sober anymore or he doesn't want to stay sober. It's because his brain is really screaming out for alcohol. And that short of going into a program or having somebody be on top of him for a year and a half to 2 years, which is what they say it takes for the brain to kind of heal itself or build alternate circuitry, somebody like Neil is going to find a, have a very, very hard time maintaining sobriety.
The last one that you mentioned, Neil, I guess if anyone in here is a cautionary tale, it's this guy. If you want to see what sustained heavy drinking does to a person's body, I seriously didn't even think that he was going to last through the end of the film, I'll be honest. Talk about some of the health issues that he was facing.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, there are so many. It's hard to even begin. But let's begin, first of all, with the damage he was doing to his own internal organs. In particular, obviously, the liver is an enormous problem when it comes to drinking. But the neuropathies, the nerve damage that happened, and you can see it, what I found incredible, and I have covered a lot of stories over my time about alcohol and alcohol use and alcohol abuse, and never have I seen the DTs or the delirium tremens that he has, the shaking, the violent shaking that takes place. So you can see that the nerve damage that's happened. Even in the piece, you hear him referring to himself, and he forgets how old he is, and he forgets that his grandson is actually not his son, and the confusion that happens. So there's the cognitive changes that take place. So there's it's stressful on the heart. It's stressful on the brain. It's stressful on the liver. It's stressful for the kidneys. There really isn't an organ system, they say, that escapes when you are a heavy user of alcohol, or where you, when you're on the spectrum in the way that Neil is. And I think you see it.
For the four subjects that you covered, and in general for people who struggle with alcohol, what is alcohol to them? Is their relationship with alcohol different than, say, the average person's relationship with alcohol?
You know, the expert Carrie Wilkins would say that when you start to talk about somebody who wants to stop but can't stop, there's usually something else that's going on that needs fixing. So you think to yourself, why does somebody continually, chronically relapse? Why, when they want to stop drinking? Oftentimes you've got to look and try to figure out what that problem is. And I'll leave more of that really to the experts. But I think that there's obviously a reliance on alcohol that's different for people who are struggling than for people who can use it in a very and drink in a very casual, benign kind of way. So, yes, I would imagine that their relationships are different with alcohol. I don't want to say that for Kenzie. You know, Kenzie would maintain that she's a young person, that young people drink like that, and oftentimes restrict their drinking to a couple of nights and go out hard on those nights. So I don't want to answer for her, but I think it's fair to say for the three others that they have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, and all three of them want to fix that. And Noelle has now picked up 2 6-month chips at AA. So she's gone for 2 stretches of 6 months, which is extraordinary. Mike is moderating his drinking. So he says that his drinking is more under control. And Neil continues to cycle in and out of detox. And I think that what the experts would tell you, that short of a really long-term facility or long-term oversight, that chances are not on his side.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of this idea of moderation, using that as a treatment for alcohol disorders. From what you saw, what was the efficacy of this moderation approach?
Yeah. It's tough.
I'm assuming that's controversial.
It is. The thinking is that moderation is something that can work for people who are on the lighter side of a moderate drinking to the very early stages on the spectrum. So that if you're somebody who's really at the beginning of a drinking problem or just drinking a little bit more than you want to, that it can work. Because the idea is you learn your cues, you learn what makes you want to drink, you learn the triggers, and you can actually learn how to avoid some of that and reduce your drinking. That's a very probably pedestrian analysis of what moderation is. And again, I hate to keep doing this, but I think that an expert could probably explain more. Mm-hmm. People who are moderate to heavy drinkers on the spectrum, the thinking is the data seems to show that moderation is not very successful. It is controversial. There's no doubt about it. And of course, it sounds great to be able to deal with a drinking problem while you're still drinking. I would say that the jury is out. But what I would also say is that it used to be, getting back to this concept of a more modern approach to an alcohol use disorder, it used to be that people would say, you know what, you don't want to stop drinking, come back to me when you do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to wait until you hit rock bottom. That is old thinking. The new thinking really is, we will meet you wherever you are. You don't want to stop drinking, but you're willing to moderate. Come on in. We'll talk about it. We'll start reducing you in some way. And that you get them in the door, and then you work with them to figure out a plan. And what they say is that oftentimes people come in thinking that they want to learn to moderate and ultimately realize that they need to abstain.
Yeah.
So it's, I think to me, it's a much more welcoming, much more forgiving model. And that, you know, people that are there to help are willing to meet you where you are, whatever that looks like. And if moderation is what it is, then by all means, let's start with moderation.
Yeah. And one of the doctors talks about the problem with treating relapse as a failure instead of as part of the recovery process and maybe even something that we can learn from. It was intriguing that one of the experts said 30 days in rehab really isn't enough, treating it in these short bursts. We need to change our perspective toward more treating it the same way we would treat any kind of chronic illness like diabetes. He says you wouldn't do just 30 days treatment for diabetes.
That's exactly right. And 30 days, they say, is really just the beginning. Absolutely just the beginning. And sometimes it's just good to clear the system out and have 30 days of sobriety to get you started. And sometimes 30 days is not even, you know, the beginning. I mean, they all seem to think that 90 days is a better idea. But of course, 90 days is tough. 90 days is tough for people to take the time off from their jobs to go away for. Rehab can be very expensive. So it just sometimes is the best that you can do would be 30 days. But everybody stressed that relapse is a part of recovery, that oftentimes, I'm not 100% certain that this is the right fact, but that it can take really 2 years of relapsing and kind of going back and forth before you get it right.
Who were some of the alcohol disorder experts you talked to in the film?
We were privileged and honored, really, to partner with the National Institutes of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, and had Dr. George Koob, its director, is one of our experts, and had several other experts as well. Dr. Deirdre Roach is a specialist in women and alcohol. Dr. Carrie Wilkins specializes in young people. And Dr. Stephen Ross, who is here at NYU Bellevue here in New York City, he is somebody who is very involved in the treatment of alcohol use disorders and speaks a lot and at length about the value of medicine to help people deal with their issue, and feels that the disease of alcohol use disorder is something that is so undertreated in this country, and yet we do have medicines that can really help in the struggle to get better.
Risky Drinking airs on Monday, December 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern on HBO. Perry Peltz, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I'll talk with the director of the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, Dr. George Koob, when we come back in just a minute. I know my listeners are like me in that you value staying up on the latest current events, and you don't have time to waste sifting through junk news. You want concise, reliable, unbiased information on your schedule. Well, Reuters TV is the revolutionary video news app for busy people who want to know what on earth is going on. And believe me, now more than ever, I find myself asking, what on earth is going on? So I want you to do yourself a favor and go to Reuters.tv/kickass. You know, Reuters is the world's largest news organization with 2,500 reporters around the globe. And Reuters TV is video news as it should be. No hot air, no talking heads, and no theatrics. That's just how I like my news. I'll tell you, more and more, I have a hard time watching cable news because whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or even CNN, there's always an agenda. But you and I, we know what they're doing. They're trying to influence our opinion. I don't like that. I don't need to be told what to think. Just give me straight up, unbiased reporting on the facts, and then I can make up my own mind. With Reuters, that's exactly what I get. Go to Reuters.tv/kickass and check out some of the cool features. You can customize the length of your personalized news broadcasts anywhere from 5 to 30 minutes, and they update throughout the day. You can schedule downloads of broadcasts to watch offline whenever you want. You get live feeds of major news events such as presidential debates and press conferences, available on your favorite device, iOS, Android, Roku, and Apple TV. It's personalized, always up to date, and ready when you are. It's basically the opposite of cable news. See for yourself. Go to Reuters.tv/kickass. That's Reuters, Reuters.tv/kickass. And now, back to the podcast. Risky Drinking is a co-production between HBO and the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Dr. George Koob is the director of the NIAAA. Dr. Koob, what are the signs that someone might be a risky drinker?
A number of things. A lot of people think it's when somebody's drinking at a level that they consider excessive. But that could change, obviously, depending on your height, your weight, and many other factors. So my rule of thumb is twofold. If you're showing some impairment in social and occupational functioning, that's usually a good sign that something's not right. And the impairment can be as subtle as a hangover the next day, or as bad as, you know, not showing up for class on Monday morning because the hangover's so bad or you just feel so wasted, to having repeated fights with your significant other when you're intoxicated, to, you know, finding that, you know, all your energy and extracurricular activities are focused on, say, alcohol. So all of these things, blackouts and things of that nature are all things that are early signs, right?
What is a blackout technically?
Well, that's a really good question. A blackout, a lot of people think a blackout is when you go unconscious when you've been drinking, but a blackout is not that. A blackout is where you seem to be functioning normally or at least somewhat abnormally. You may be dancing on the table with the boss's wife or something like that, but the next day you have no memory whatsoever. It's like a gap in the tape. And so, you know, you go into the office or you know, we place a work and everybody's smirking and laughing at you and you don't know why because you don't remember what transpired when you were intoxicated. And it involves it has a very sensitive effect on that process that we call consolidation of short-term memory to long-term memory. And so you just probably you're not laying down that memory because that system is blocked.
What ages are most at risk for developing an alcohol disorder?
Well, it varies across the lifespan. I don't have any numbers for that one, but I would say probably in your mid-20s to early 30s is when the manifestations of an alcohol use disorder probably show themselves. But some people, I mean, you're more likely to have an alcohol use disorder if you've begun drinking at age 12 or 13. So the earlier you start misusing alcohol, the more likely you are to have an alcohol use disorder later in life. But I would say that probably the period when you're going to start picking up something like this is between 25 and 35.
Is part of the problem that people's alcohol tolerance goes down with age and maybe they think that they can keep drinking as much as they did when they were 20 years old?
Well, I mean, there's some part to that. I think the recovery from excessive intoxication is slower when you get older. The hangovers I mean, we definitely have anecdotal information. Not too many people have really studied this, but the hangovers are much more excruciating in older individuals. But I think that it's mainly just accumulation of many, many factors. Some are social, some are brain changes, some are tolerance. And I would argue it's probably the opposite. It's not that you lose tolerance to alcohol, you're gaining tolerance. We know, and that's the insidious part, because now you can drink a lot, but the brain changes are still occurring. And it's either called a low sensitivity to alcohol, or I prefer high tolerance to alcohol, but it's innate, and they were born with that. And we know that links up with a high propensity for alcohol use disorder later in life.
Talk about the toll that alcohol abuse can take on our physical and mental health.
Well, it's pretty pronounced. I mean, half of liver disease in this country now is attributable to alcohol. We're seeing a shift in liver disease into younger ages. Even had surgeons up here from Hopkins telling us that they were going to be doing a liver transplant in an under 30-year-old. So that's a big one. On the mental health end of it, there's a high comorbidity of alcohol use disorders with anxiety disorders and depressive disorders, and in particular, post-traumatic stress disorder. And there was a recent study that came out from the University of California, San Diego, of a large study done on military recruits. And basically, alcohol misuse can lend to a vulnerability to PTSD, but PTSD can lend to a vulnerability to alcohol misuse. So the two go hand in hand. It's estimated that 30, maybe even 40% of individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder ultimately develop an alcohol use disorder. So that's one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, and I was learning in this documentary that depression and anxiety make the drinking worse, and the drinking in turn makes the depression and anxiety worse. So it kind of traps people in a vicious cycle, huh?
Exactly right. I call this the term from social psychology is misregulation. You try to fix a problem, but you're using the wrong tool. So when you drink to fix, an anxious period or a depressed period, it works great for the first 30 minutes. But when the alcohol starts to wear off, when the ascending limit of the dose effect curve goes away, these things come back with a vengeance, like the demons pouring in through the hole. So, You actually end up trying to fix the problem with something that makes the problem worse, and that's for me, that's one of the crossover lines also to your first question. When do you have an alcohol use disorder? Well, it's when you don't feel normal unless you're drinking, and when the drinking wears off, then you feel even worse. So it's a vicious cycle, exactly what you said.
Yeah, and you've spent much of your career studying the neurobiology of alcohol and drug addiction. Talk about how heavy drinking changes the brain chemistry in a way that makes it harder and harder to quit over time.
Yeah, so that's one of the compelling questions. So when you first drink and when you're young, you have a very robust reward system. Your dopamine system is very active, and so alcohol feels good and releases the reward transmitters. But as you continually excessively do that, the brain starts to adapt. So you lose your reward function and you gain, what's even more insidious is you gain your stress system. So whereas alcohol is always thought to be this anti-stress, a treatment, in fact, when it wears off, the stress system gets hyperactivated. And so it's a kind of a double whammy. You're losing pleasure in normal activities, but you're also gaining stress in everyday life, and that can drive you to drink even more. But then there's a third piece, and the third piece is, in fact, that there is damage or at least decreased function in your frontal cortex, and that's the front end of your brain that you use for decisions, executive function, making choices, delaying reinforcement. And as that becomes impaired, you keep making the wrong choices, And so all this combination of decreased reward, increased stress, and impaired executive function is a triple whammy that really catches people in this continuing cycle of engagement and disengagement and dysphoria and so forth.
Dr. Kube, I remember for a while there was this study that claimed that a glass or two of red wine a day could actually reduce a person's risk of heart disease. Is that still true? Is there still any thinking that moderate alcohol consumption could in some ways possibly be beneficial?
There is pretty good evidence that one drink a day, pretty good evidence that actually has beneficial effects on stroke, on certain forms of heart disease, possibly even on diabetes. So it gets a little controversial, these health benefit effects of alcohol, but it really depends mostly on your individual makeup, your history, and the history in your family.
In the film Risky Drinking, there was a statistic that said that I guess men are more prone to alcohol disorders, but apparently that gap is narrowing. I guess the first question that comes to my mind would be, is it that men are drinking less or that women are drinking more, or do we know why?
Actually, the data are both. Men are drinking a little bit less, or at least seemingly a little less of the heavy drinking. And women are catching up with men in the percent of women who drink and the percent of women who actually engage in some of this, what I would call, binge drinking. So the curves are converging. And the hard part about this, or the important part about this, is to realize that we do have data now over the last 20 years indicating that women actually have more deleterious effects when it comes to, liver disease and other physiological pathophysiological effects of alcohol than men. They tend to escalate into the physiological problems faster than men when they start drinking excessively. So it is an area of intense interest and investigation right now.
Are there any promising new treatments that are being tested right now?
There are a number of pharmaceutical agents that are in clinical trials. One that we're doing here in a multi-center clinical trial, it already had a positive clinical trial at a single center site, is gabapentin. It's an old anticonvulsant, but it's also used for certain chronic pain syndromes. And so that's one promising medication. There are there's quite a bit of basic research. We have, I would say, probably 40, 50 targets that might be viable. And what we're doing at the Institute is we're trying to speed up that process with a number of approaches, see if we can get compounds into humans. We had a positive clinical trial recently here at the Institute on an anti-stress neurochemical that blocks vasopressin 1B receptors. But we also need cooperation from the pharmaceutical industry because, we can actually do some of the preliminary clinical trials, but when it comes to getting a drug ready for market, it can get quite expensive. So, we're making an outreach in that direction as well. But, I'm the eternal optimist. So, I think there are things coming along. I'd like to see a little more energy put into what I call the dark side of addiction and alcoholism in particular, so that, people can reverse this kind of break with homeostasis in their emotional systems. And I think, that's an area we're putting focus on.
Well, before I let you go, it's the holidays. The popular perception is that we do more drinking at this time of year. Is there anything to that?
Absolutely. We do more drinking. We have more problems associated with drinking. And, it stands to reason because it's a time when families get together. It's a time when you remember loved ones that have, have passed away. It's a time when you miss your friends if you're in some far, far away place. And it's a family time. And then, of course, there's also all the, the triggers that family members can can elicit in your emotional status. So, you know, all of these things combined make it a vulnerable time for excessive drinking. And, you know, our advice is enjoy the holidays, enjoy a drink once in a while if you're inclined, but be careful about, you know, overdoing it and, you know, trying to self-medicate, because that's where things really tend to, you know, go down the wrong way.
Good advice. Well, where can people find more resources if they think they might have an alcohol problem?
Well, they can just Google NIAAA, but there's a website that we recommend called Rethinking Drinking. If you actually just Google Rethinking Drinking, that'll bring you in there. And then once you're in Rethinking Drinking, you can find out all kinds of cool things, including what amounts of alcohol in your favorite drink, how many calories are in your favorite drink, what a dose effect function looks like, and all those things that we've been talking about. But you can also see booklets for a referral if you think, you know, somebody does have a problem. There's a booklet on treatment. There's a booklet on prevention. There are a number of things that Rethinking Drinking can lead you to that are also part of our website. We have a big program called the College AIM, which is a matrix, a menu of different prevention options that we've sent to all the colleges and universities in the country. So if you're sending a young one to a college next year, it's something worth looking at and finding out what that college or university is actually doing on prevention of that nature.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Kube, thank you for all that you're doing, and thanks for talking to me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks again to Dr. George Kube and Perry Peltz for coming on the show. Risky Drinking airs tonight at 8 p.m. on HBO. Or you can watch it anytime with a membership to HBO Go or HBO Now. For more information, visit HBO.com. You can follow Perry Peltz on Twitter at Perry Peltz. That's PerriPeltz. And to learn more about the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, or if you think that you might have an alcohol abuse problem, visit niaaa.nih.gov. That's niaaa.nih.gov. Again, check out our new advertiser and show them your support for the podcast by visiting reuters.tv/kickass. That's Reuters, reuters.tv/kickass. And don't forget to take our listener survey so we can keep this show free and find other advertisers who are best matched to you, our listeners. Just take 5 minutes to go to podsurvey.com/kick and take the survey. And when you're done, be sure to register for that $100 Amazon gift card giveaway. And once again, before you start your Amazon shopping this Christmas, visit the sponsor page on our website at kickassnews.com and copy our Amazon link into your web browser first. Then Amazon will kick us a little coin for every order you make this season. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/kickassnews. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kickass News. Kickass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.